like food assistance, KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports.
The Gila River Indian community is calling them general welfare payments, one-time $1,000 disbursements for each 18-year-old tribal member, regardless of whether they're a SNAP recipient. That decision came on Saturday during a special counsel session called by Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis.
I hope that this payment brings some peace of mind during this time of uncertainty at the federal level.
Lewis urges his tribe south of Phoenix to plan for the long haul.
So please, use or set aside for your food needs to pay bills and to add some measure of economic security.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
The chairman of the Lumbee Tribe of North Carolina says he's confident that this year full services and benefits will be extended to his tribe. Chairman John Lowry made the remarks Wednesday during a legislative hearing on the Lumbee Fairness Act, which would grant the tribe federal recognition. Lowry says his tribe has long sought federal status.
I'm a descendant of Solomon Locklear Sr., one of the 44 tribal leaders who in 1888, petitioned Congress to recognize the Lumbee tribe. Today, 137 years later, I stand before you once again advocating for justice and equal treatment through full federal recognition.
Wednesday's hearing in the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs included opposition. Leaders from the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians of North Carolina and the Shawnee Tribe of Oklahoma testified against the bill, while Lowry submitted a list of tribal support and testified that nearly all of North Carolina's congressional delegation backs the bill. President Trump, in a statement this week, issued his support for the Lumbee Tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, November 6, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Althea Billings, Josh Salem, Lizard, and Isabel Charlet. The producer is Annette Newell and our engineer is Otto. Our director of evening news is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth, up next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Three notable things after Trump's meeting with Xi Jinping. The drug boat attacks, one outlier in the Caribbean, and Russian paramilitary units experience setbacks in Central Africa. First, three notable things after Trump's meeting with Xi. In my Tuesday commentary, I evaluated the meeting between President Trump and China's President Xi Jinping in Korea. To hear tell from the U.S. side, you would think Trump pulled off a major trade deal that resolved the key issues with China, U.S. restrictions on sales of advanced computer chips, and Chinese restrictions on sales of rare earth minerals. As I pointed out, the actual deal is full of holes, not just on the CHIPS rare earth arrangement, but also on a host of other matters, such as Chinese-produced fentanyl, U.S. agricultural exports, especially soybeans, and high U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports. In sum, we can credit the meeting with having eased U.S.-China trade tensions by removing export controls and other regulations for a time. On the other hand, the meeting kicked the can down the road. Promises made and not kept will revive tensions before too long, just as they did in Trump's first term and in Joe Biden's term. The bottom line is that the basis for mutual mistrust has not been addressed and is highly unlikely to be addressed until a new set of leaders emerges in both countries. Here, I want to note three other pieces to the Korea meeting that have gotten much less attention. One is Trump's comments on U.S. nuclear weapons policy. The second is a major topic Trump and Xi did not discuss, Taiwan. The third is a regional meeting Trump decided not to attend, leaving Xi to dominate the stage. Trump threw a curveball into the meeting with an announcement just minutes before he landed that the United States would immediately restart nuclear weapons testing after a lull of 33 years. The announcement came after Russia announced that it had also conducted tests of a nuclear-capable cruise missile and sea drone this week. This is the kind of unpredictable and unwelcome diplomacy typical of Trump. In practice, it probably won't mean U.S. detonation of a nuclear bomb, which would be contrary to the 1996 Comprehensive Nuclear Weapon Test Ban that the U.S. signed but never ratified. Most likely, Trump wants renewed testing of nuclear weapon delivery systems. Asked whether he believed his directive would create a riskier nuclear environment, Trump offered his usual exaggerated confidence. "I think we have it pretty well locked up." Trump added that the United States was already in talks with Russia about denuclearization and that, quote, China would be added to that. I'll bet that's news to both Moscow and Beijing. Besides their display of new nuclear weapons, the Russians have indicated they will pull out of the Treaty on Plutonium Production, hardly an indicator of denuclearization. China has consistently refused to join U.S.-Russia nuclear weapon talks because it is engaged in a nuclear weapon expansion program as it seeks to narrow the gap with the U.S. and Russia. If anything, Trump's sudden announcement will spur China's expanding nuclear program, especially since Trump has also agreed to provide fuel for a South Korean nuclear-powered submarine and, under Biden, but with Trump's endorsement, to providing Australia with a nuclear submarine under the so-called AUKUS security agreement, that is, Australia, United Kingdom, United States. On Taiwan, prior to meeting with Xi, there had been speculation that Trump would weaken the U.S. commitment to Taiwan's defense in order to get a big trade deal. That didn't happen. In a 60 Minutes interview after returning home, Trump said there was no need to bring up Taiwan with Xi since Xi knows what would happen if he decided to invade Taiwan. I guess we can say that Trump endorses the longstanding U.S. policy on Taiwan of strategic ambiguity. But Trump also says Xi has assured him that China will not attack Taiwan while Trump is president, an assurance I can almost guarantee Xi did not make. The third neglected topic is Trump's failure to attend a meeting of the Asia-Pacific Economic Forum that took place following the Trump-Xi meeting. Trump chose to return to Washington in time for a Halloween party. Xi stayed in Korea. He used the occasion of Trump's absence to reinforce China's message of economic cooperation to ease supply chains, keep tariffs low, and promote adherence to global trade rules. In short, work with China's rather than the U.S.'s leadership, which he accused, without naming it, of a, quote, return of hegemonism and the law of the jungle. The rougher the seas, said Xi, the more we must pull together. He held separate meetings with the leaders of Japan, Canada, and Thailand. The one with Prime Minister Mark Carney of Canada is notable for Canada's decision to expand trade with China now that Trump is refusing to negotiate. Trump brought home trade agreements with South Korea and Japan, but Xi has established China as Asia-Pacific's trade leader. Not that countries in the region all welcome that development, since China exercises its own brand of trade pressure. But faced with high U.S. tariffs and constant uncertainty about U.S. policy, most Asia-Pacific countries will count increasingly on China's trade, investments, and loans. The drug boat attacks, one outlier in the Caribbean. Nearly all the countries in the Caribbean, as well as the regional organization CARICOM, have expressed guarded concern about the Trump administration's attacks on alleged drug boats coming from Venezuela. In their view, the attacks disturb the peace of the region, a polite way of saying they disrupt ocean traffic and therefore are economically costly. But there's one outlier, Kamala Persad-Bissessar, Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago. She took office in May and has been unwavering in her support for President Trump, cheering airstrikes against alleged drug boats, allowing U.S. military operations in her country's waters, and permitting an American warship to dock at the capital's main port. On drug smugglers, she has said the U.S. should, quote, kill them all violently. That view has brought about a confrontation with Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro. He has suspended an agreement with Trinidad on offshore oil exploration and has warned Persad-Bissessar that Trinidad, quote, will suffer the most tragic consequences of any intervention by the U.S. into Venezuela. Persad-Bissessar is evidently betting that alignment with Trump and a successor regime to Maduro will produce economic benefits that outweigh support of Venezuela's sovereignty. Russian paramilitary units experience setbacks in Central Africa. Russia's Africa Corps, successor to the Wagner Group that had essentially replaced U.S. and French military trainers in Central African states, apparently is now on the outs with those countries. In June, the Washington Post reports, Wagner mercenaries left Mali, their reputation in tatters, because of their failure to blunt insurgent advances and their history of slaughtering civilians in the name of providing security. Military juntas in Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, according to a senior U.S. military officer, are now experiencing buyer's remorse after ousting U.S. and French troops over the 3 years past and, to varying degrees, accepting Moscow's help fighting Al-Qaeda and Islamic State insurgents. They're starting to ask for help, the Malians in particular, said the senior U.S. military official. Will the U.S. and France be able to take advantage of the Russians' failures? One who thinks so is none other than Eric Prince, a Trump ally who is said to be offering his company's security services to Central African states. In other words, replacing one set of mercenaries with another. In other news, Vietnam is tilting Russia's way. Vietnam reportedly is exasperated with the United States. The elimination of U.S. aid for clean energy and HIV prevention, Trump's tariffs, indifference to requests for a leader-to-leader meeting, a Trump golf development near Hanoi that has forced local residents from their land. All these have alienated Vietnamese leaders who would prefer a balanced relationship among China, Russia, and the United States. Their interests are being ignored. Trump goes after European climate rules. The Trump administration is seeking to undermine environmental protection rules abroad as well as at home. It recently succeeded at thwarting a United Nations-sponsored regulation that would have imposed a pollution tax on international shipping. The administration is also lobbying against an European Union directive that establishes a corporate due diligence duty intended to apply to thousands of companies in and outside the EU. The core elements of this duty, the EU says, are identifying and addressing potential and actual adverse human rights and environmental impacts in the company's own operations, their subsidiaries, and those of their business partners. In addition, the directive sets out an obligation for large companies to adopt and put into effect, through best efforts, a transition plan for climate change mitigation. Trump's energy department joined the government of Qatar in warning the EU that it's risking higher prices for critical energy supplies unless it alters or deletes the directive. The implicit threat is that U.S. investment and trade policies will change otherwise. Next, the U.S. finds hundreds of Israeli human rights violations. A classified report by the State Department's Office of Inspector General has found that Israeli military units committed, quote, many hundreds of potential violations of U.S. human rights law in the Gaza Strip that would take the State Department multiple years, that's a quote, to review, according to two U.S. officials who relayed the details to the Washington Post. But the prospects are dim that the department will ever advocate denial of military aid to Israel, as is required under U.S. law, and as many congressional critics of Israel have been urging for over a year. Israel has always enjoyed an advantage in reviews by the State Department of its human rights record. According to a former U.S. State Department official, when it comes to Israel, a U.S. working group, not just one official, as in most cases, must reach, quote, a consensus on whether a gross violation of human rights has occurred. Then Israel must be consulted as to what action it has taken. Finally, the Secretary of State must sign off. Under Biden, this process began but never reached the stage of cutting off military aid to Israel. Now, there won't even be a start. A related story. Top Israeli military judge is arrested over incriminating video. Israel's top military judicial officer has been arrested after she leaked a video that showed Israeli Defense Forces soldiers abusing a Palestinian prisoner. Yifat Tomer Yerushalmi said in a resignation letter last week that she had authorized publication of the video to defuse attacks on military investigators and prosecutors working on the case. The beating of the prisoner occurred at the notorious Sdeid Taiman Military Detention Center, which in 2024 had been raided by military prosecutors because of the use of torture by the IDF. Right-wing politicians and pundits called the soldiers detained in the case heroes, and they attacked military investigators as traitors and called for the case against the soldiers to be dropped. Prime Minister Netanyahu defended the abuses, saying, quote, "This is perhaps the most severe public relations attack that the State of Israel has experienced since its establishment." Five soldiers were charged in the case but never served time in jail or were otherwise punished. Tomer Yerushalmi was concerned that the 2024 incident and other cases of prisoner abuse were being swept under the rug, leaving military lawyers rather than the IDF abusers as targets of attack. Israeli critics point out that her arrest shows that Israel's judicial system is far less independent than is usually claimed. Undermining the case for asylum. In an extraordinary undermining of asylum petitions, the Department of Homeland Security asked a judge this month to deport a father of two to Afghanistan, where he expects the Taliban to kill him. To make its case, the department did not accuse him of any crime or disloyalty or act of terrorism. Instead, attorneys argued that Afghanistan, a country U.S. forces rescued him from in 2021, is safe for his return. The man rightly fears for his life, since he publicly supported the U.S. cause in Afghanistan and worked for a U.S.-based nonprofit in Kabul. Homeland Security's argument that Afghanistan is safe is absurd and seems to be motivated by the administration's determination to get rid of the roughly 200,000 Afghan refugees in the United States. The legal case is ongoing in Virginia. Finally, an update on Trump's tariffs in advance of the Supreme Court's decision. The Senate rebuked President Trump's trade policy for the third time in as many days, voting 51-47 last week to eliminate the national emergency underpinning Trump's global tariffs announced in April. The resolutions followed two others earlier this week to eliminate duties on goods from Canada and Brazil, respectively. These votes are only symbolic, however, since the House previously voted against any attempt to eliminate the tariffs. While most Republicans voted no on ending Trump's tariffs, four did vote in favor. Senators Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Rand Paul of Kentucky, and Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.
KABU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KABU News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Washington County residents are pushing their local elected officials to do more in response to immigration enforcement violence. Hillsborough residents had serious outcry about ICE kidnappings in their community. Locals gave 3 hours of testimony earlier this week. Here's an excerpt.
I'm here today to ask you for a state of emergency. We all knew these ICE agents would eventually come to our city and state, yet we did nothing to prepare. Lately, we have seen how these agents have been coming and terrorizing our communities, damaging properties, and violating traffic laws. These agents stay in parking lots surveilling the area for long periods of time. They have been misidentifying innocent civilians, and they have been seen arresting people coming out of church. We understand that the Hillsborough Police Department cannot intervene during an arrest, but now they can't intervene when these agents trespass, stalk, or even when they use excessive force with these arrests to the point of hospitalization. The HPD has made it very clear that they will not and cannot protect their residents, and their lack of professionalism has shown us that they also can't be trusted. Now I ask you, what will you do when they start bounty hunting us? When they get comfortable enough to start kidnapping American citizens due to legal racial profiling? Like myself, many immigrants have worked taking care of your grandparents. We work blue-collar jobs, and some of us are business owners, and we pick the food that you eat. We are being persecuted, and you're telling me the best we can do now is to record in hopes that one day justice will come? We demand that you start doing your job and protecting our sanctuary city to make sure that these agents aren't getting away with breaking the law. We ask for a state of emergency that has been delayed far too long because you refuse to see us as human. I should not have to plead for you to stand up for us, for this is the job you have signed up for. You are watching them. I should not have to plead for you to stand up for us. This is your job. This is the job you signed up for. You're watching them violate our constitutional rights. These agents have the ability to do their job lawful and in a lawful and civil manner, yet they choose not to. We have seen the aggressive behavior, intimidation tactics, and have seen the damage they have done to our country. I demand that the city of Hillsborough stand up to what is right. Have these agents remove their mask, identify themselves, and drive proper vehicles that show who they work for. If you have been turning a blind eye to this, shame on you. To my fellow peers, posting on social media is no longer enough. We needed to come out and show up for your community. To my city council, it is unbelievable that we have to come here and list reasons as to why we shouldn't be persecuted, to list reasons as to why we deserve to be in this country. We are the American people. We make this country run. We demand a state of emergency.
I remember a lot as a child because it's not too long after World War II. I've seen plenty of videos about Hitler, and I know how they take over. And they don't take over from the top down. Or we don't solve that from the top down. We solve it from the bottom up. We have got to go up against all of this. I'm at the point, I live out in the country, you know, I'm scared. I'm scared for other people as well. If ICE comes to me and wants to take me away, I'll kill them. And that's because, you know what, they're trying to abduct me. And I have the right to protect myself. And if they come to my house and they want to do that, fine. You know what? I'll meet them with a shotgun. And that's just how I feel about it right now. And if you guys don't support this community that I have lived in for 70 years by bucking up and doing the right thing, which is going up against this monster who has taken apart our democracy, and just right in your face it is. Not even, you know, all these people, they need to go, you know. And if you got to get the guts to stand up against them. And if you don't, then the city of civilians will. I'll go freaking march on Washington if I have to. And this time it will be for a good reason, and not just because I'm upset with some of the policies. He is a child, and he just does things because he's vindictive and evil. And if you can't see that, boy, you better start learning something, because you know I have seen it. I have seen African Americans being hosed off by high pressure hoses. You know, I am sick of it. I am sick of the racism. And sick of people that won't do anything about it. Yeah. And that's just about how mad I am, you know. And I have never, see this black eye? That wasn't from a fight. It's from chopping wood. I have never hurt anybody in my life. But I tell you, when 100,000, 200,000 soldiers have died for this country, I'll be right there, you know. Now, I never joined the military. I never had to. But boy, I'll tell you, this is it right here. And I've got to do something.
First of all, I want to say that I do apologize if I do stutter. I am very nervous. As many of you have seen the video of two young girls getting maced by three unidentified ICE agents, we want to clarify these two girls aren't minors, but they are my family. On Wednesday, October 29th, my cousins and I had seen a post on Facebook that some suspicious activity was going on in our community. We want to help keep our community safe and aware, so we headed out around 6:30 a.m. to our local Latino community. We drove around for a bit, checking local parking lots and gas stations. We spotted them in the parking lot at the Forest Grove Dollar Tree. We parked in front of the vehicle, and shortly after, a different one showed up. They flashed their high beams at us and did a hand signal for us to move on. They both exited the parking lot not much later. As we were on our way down to Portland, we took the same route as one of the vehicles. We were alerting the people around us by honking and yelling. At Scotch Church Road, we were going to take the roundabout and exit through Jackson School Road and then go onto the highway. We noticed the vehicle speeding and going onto the sidewalk. It also did two illegal rounds on this roundabout. The vehicle exited through Jackson School Road, and so did we. We took the highway, and the driver would brake check us, swerve into other lanes, and be reckless. We exited through Brookwood, and we kept alerting the people of their behavior. We met them down to the Hillsborough Police Department. This is when a police vehicle came out, and so we moved along to park our car. As these situations are new and scary to us, we got off our vehicle yelling and screaming the traffic violations we had witnessed. The officer told us to go to our car, and he would talk to us there. He told the ICE agents, and I quote, "Take off and meet me somewhere else, Walgreens here or something." We expressed our concern to the officers again, and as the vehicle was leaving, the backseat passengers rolled down their windows and mocked us. Not knowing what else to do, I recorded the incident where my two cousins got maced by an unidentified ICE agent, and who left the parking lot shortly after, and as the officer stood by and did nothing. Later on the same day at 9:30 a.m., I would go back to the HPD to ask for the names and badge numbers of the officers present. When I walked in and asked for the names, the receptionist stated that it would be easier for me to write it down on my phone, as printing them would be too time-consuming. He gave me four names of the officers that were supposedly there. Later, when I checked, they were incorrect. Due to their lack of professionalism, this caused misinformation to spread, and we only got one out of the four cops present. From a young age, my parents taught me that standing up for others is the right thing to do. And today I stand with the Latino community and want to speak out of the injustice that is happening here. I want to say that we are not criminals, but we are workers, parents, neighbors. We are people who care deeply and give selflessly. All we ask is to be treated with the same compassion and respect we give every single day. The same system that depends on people like us is tearing our families apart. ICE raids, unjust detentions, and deportations are breaking the very communities that keep this country running. Because of immigration status, families are being separated and targeted. So tonight I'm speaking as a proud daughter of two immigrants. Tonight I have the privilege and I have the voice to stand up when others can't. We demand a state of emergency for these so-called agents to be identified, to remove the masks they wear, and for them to drive vehicles with proper identification. And I want to say this to my Latino community and to the people present here. They are afraid of us because we are not afraid of them. Thank you.
Hillsborough City Council voted to allocate $200,000 to a low-barrier grant program for residents, with more details to come at their November 18th meeting. Earlier this week on Tuesday, the Washington County Commission declared a state of emergency related to ICE enforcement. Around a third of those Oregonians detained by ICE were arrested in Washington County, the most diverse county in the state. The Washington County State of Emergency directs $200,000 in emergency funds to support families that are impacted by ICE raids. But Commissioner Nafisa Fai pushed the board to go further with their action.
I want to be clear, however, while this declaration is an important step, it does not go far enough. We're not using all the tools and all the tools in our toolbox to help our community, to entertain the idea of rent evictions for residential and commercial. We've seen the articles in the news about minority business owners are being impacted in Washington County, and residents are impacted. If people are not going to the work, who's going to pay their rent? I mentioned this morning shutoffs. You know, other jurisdictions are considering to suspend some shutoffs, water shutoffs. So I do think that this too conversation is to be continued, because there are other tools in our toolbox that we can help residents. The situation the community faces demands continued aggressive action to safeguard our residents. And I do agree that we cannot afford complicity. I've worked hard to elevate this issue and ensure it receives the attention it's required. It is a reflection of my commitment to the people of this county and to the urgency of this moment. We need every leader and every community partner fully engaged in this topic. This is a moment that calls for focus, responsibility, and continued bold decision making. I will continue to push for additional measures necessary to protect our community, and I encourage others to do the same. This moment demands our leadership, demands however way we can protect the community, however way we can speak. You know, there are people who are not a minority who are stepping up to pick up kits for other people because people are being profiled. If that sits with you correctly, then that we have a problem in our society. We have to come together and say what ICE is doing is absolutely unacceptable and demand local government, county, cities, to step up in a way that is beyond performative, in a way that has an impact for everyone, in a way that calms the disruption that's happening in Washington County streets. So I will be supporting this, but again, this conversation is to be continued.
For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billing.
Hello, this is Daffodil. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland.
Got troubles. I got